Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. I'm Grant Reher. My guest today is New York State Assemblyman Will Barkley. A Republican, Assemblyman Barkley has been in the state legislature for almost 20 years and represents the 120th Assembly District. The district sits north of Syracuse and along the eastern shore of Lake Ontario and includes the cities of Oswego and Fulton and the town of Lysander. Assemblyman Barkley has held a number of leadership positions in the legislature and is currently serving as the minority leader in the state assembly. Assemblyman Barkley, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me here.
Well, it's great that you made the time. Thank you. I'd like to start, if it's okay with you, with a question about you personally, because it was in the news last November that you had tested positive for COVID. So I'm just wondering how you're feeling. Are you completely recovered? What was that experience like?
Yeah, I was lucky, Grant. I did get COVID. I got it, I believe it was election night, believe it or not. Didn't feel any symptoms probably until three or four days later. Never had any cold symptoms, just felt very tired. There was one day I was bedridden. So I thought it, you know, possibly just because of my job, I could possibly be around someone that had COVID. So I thought I'd go get tested. And by the time I got tested, I was already feeling better. So I think I was very fortunate. I didn't really have any real substantial, problems with the COVID. Now, that being said, my wife, I was able to give her, unfortunately, COVID, and she had more flu-like symptoms and cold-like symptoms than I did. So I guess this really does affect everybody a little bit differently.
It sounds like you folks were relatively lucky. Neither of you went to the hospital. So did having the virus, though, provide any kind of insight into the pandemic that you didn't have before or hadn't appreciated before?
I don't know real insights. I mean, it did show that it's very easy to contract the virus and how contagious it is because, you know, I took, just like everybody else, tried to take all the precautions I could. Again, with my job, it does require me once in a while to be out. And I guess that's where I got it. But it wasn't at a large gathering by any means. I always try to mask and keep socially distanced. But even with all those protections, I think you're still susceptible to getting it. And that's clearly what happened here. And interestingly enough, that, you know, with my family, I did give it to my wife. It's hard to avoid that. My kids who live with us did not get it, interestingly. So, you know, it just seems like it's all over the place. But we were lucky and we were happy that we got through it.
Oh, that's good. Well, let's talk about COVID in the state just a little more generally. Are there specific things that you'd like to see New York State doing to battle COVID that it's not doing at present or not doing well enough?
Yeah, I think that's, I appreciate that question. I mean, what I'm hearing mostly from people around the state and certainly my constituency is the vaccination rollout. There's been a lot of criticism of how this has gone. They've started to make appointments and they have to cancel appointments. As we've heard about vaccines not being, you know, having been destroyed because they weren't able to keep them frozen, that kind of stuff. So I think, unfortunately, we've seen kind of a pattern here through the governor's office where they like to control everything since this pandemic struck. And really, it's my understanding that the counties were the ones in the best position to roll out the vaccination program. They're the ones that have the trainings. They're the ones that, I guess, have to do, my understanding is, every year they have to come up with a yearly annual vaccination plan. This is even before COVID. That plan was helped funded by the federal and state. And for whatever reason, the governor's office has kind of blew past that and was trying to control it themselves. I will say, I think they recognize that this has been kind of a disaster and they're trying to get the wheels back on the cart and strained out here a little bit. And they are now working with the counties, but I still think there's a long ways to go. And I still think they ought to be listening to the locals that probably are in the best position to figure out how to distribute this most efficiently.
I was going to ask you this later, but since you brought it up, I'll get into it now. It has to do with the governor and the emergency powers, because you mentioned his control over this there. Are you concerned that the governor's emergency powers have been in place for too long now?
Yeah, so I get this question quite a bit, because I did support that way back in March when we granted them those extraordinary powers, because at the time we didn't really know what COVID was all about. That also included some money at $40 million, which seems like a drop in the bucket now. But at least at that time, I figured, yeah, we'll definitely have to fund some of the state's reaction to this pandemic. Since that time, I think this has gone on a long time. I do feel very strongly that the legislature, now that we have our hands a little bit more around this, that the legislature ought to start reasserting itself as a co-equal branch of government. So I've been calling for that. There's no reason we can't do it as a legislature. We're meeting now. We've been somewhat successful meeting remotely. So it seems there's no reason that the governor should have this extraordinary powers. That being said, I'm not saying we just curb all the governor's powers. There are some things that the executive branch can do much more efficiently than the legislative branch. But overall, you need that back and forth and you need the oversight coming from the legislative branch. So I feel strongly that we ought to take back that. And we can see some of it's just plain oversight. You know, the nurse, I'm even sympathetic to some degree of, you know, some of the mistakes the governor's made because he didn't know what he was doing also. But we have the issue with the nursing homes where we had, you know, thousands of poor families lose loved ones in nursing homes. And a lot of people think it's because of the governor's executive order. We can't get any, we could, but we haven't asserted ourselves. The legislature needs to assert itself to find out what happened, whether we have to subpoena people to get this information. I know there's been a lot of FOIL requests. So we can, one, find out what happened, and two, make sure it doesn't happen again in the future. And I think that's a very legitimate role for the legislature to play. And unfortunately, I don't think we've been strong enough in that regard.
You're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. I'm Grant Reher, and I'm speaking with New York State Assembly Minority Leader Will Barkley. On that note, then, thinking of both the problems with the vaccine and the issue with the nursing homes, really almost a scandal, really, I wanted to take those and link them to a bigger policy question. Before COVID hit, it looked like the state was moving toward a decision point on this big healthcare reform, the New York Health Act. And the governor kind of had put it aside, but there was movement in the Senate to really push this, and that was part of the campaign platform of the new group of more liberal Democratic senators that got elected in the previous election cycle. I'm just wondering, do you think whether the experience with the vaccines and the nursing homes will dampen some of the enthusiasm for turning over the overall management of the healthcare system to the state?
Well, I'm not sure that really was getting much traction. There were certainly some, you know, liberal progressives that were pushing at the people were running at it. But ultimately, when you come down to looking at that, it's how it's going to be paid for. And when you're talking about government takeover of healthcare in New York State, you're talking for a proposition of about $250 to $300 billion. As you know, Grant, our budget's about $180 billion. So the math never added up on how exactly the state was going to be able to accomplish that. Now, obviously, there's some savings that can be done by the government taking over, but there's a lot of expense that go in. And frankly, it doesn't balance. So you've seen other states, other politicians and elected officials run on that. In fact, the great example is the governor of Vermont wanted to implement it. He ran a whole campaign on it and then got into office and realized that, you know, to do this practically, it's impossible. It's just impossible. So it doesn't. So it's great rhetoric, I think, and a lot of people like to campaign on it. And really, what are we trying to do ultimately? Aren't we trying to make sure that everybody has access to healthcare? Well, good news, in New York State, almost everybody has access to healthcare. Something like 5 or 6% of those that don't have some sort of government, either Medicare, Medicaid, or private insurance out there. So it's a very low percentage. It seems to me we could focus on that population and make it a lot cheaper than just having the state take over a complete healthcare in New York State.
So thinking about the legislative session coming up, what will you be wanting to focus on doing? And will there be any room for anything other than COVID this session?
Well, I'm hoping with the vaccination, and obviously we're running through this pandemic, sometime hopefully we get back to our lives being normal. And what's interesting, I think, as we get there, a lot of the issues and troubles or challenges we had in New York State were exposed during the pandemic. We'd be working on these before the pandemic, but certainly they're probably more acute now than ever. And that's, the business climate in New York State. During this pandemic, our small businesses, the backbone of our economy, have just been getting hammered. Restaurants, mom and pop stores. The big businesses, they seem to be doing okay, but it's the little ones that are struggling. So, I think our conference and myself, the number one priority we're going to do is try to help give some assistance to these businesses that were already struggling pre-pandemic, but it's certainly been hit hard during this time. And when I say what we can help do with them, you know, some of these regulatory things that in a vacuum don't seem bad, but they all add up after a while. In fact, I was just thinking the other day, the governor, you know, I think it was yesterday, came out with a state of state about this new clean energy policy. It's going to cost the state $26 billion. They're going to spread it over all the ratepayers in New York State. And when you say that, well, it's like, maybe it'll be an extra $100 per person or something in New York. But ultimately, these things just continue to add up. And when you compare us to other states or other parts of the world, we just become uncompetitive. And that's why ultimately, I think we see people leaving New York State. Just last year, we lost 130,000 people in New York. That's a city the size of Syracuse. So something's got to change. It's not sustainable. Unfortunately, the pandemic is probably, or maybe fortunately, brought more light to this issue. And so that's what I've always focused on. I'm sure that's what my colleagues in our conference want to focus on too.
So you say that the pandemic has brought light to this, but there's a potential danger, I guess, I wanted to ask you about to see if you think it is a danger, I guess, is the better way to say it. But there is a hope that the governor seems to be banking on that the new administration at the national level, the Biden administration, is going to be able to pass legislation that is going to fiscally aid the state. Do you have a concern that if it does that, it's going to kind of further enable the state's spending problems?
I think that's a legitimate concern. I do think where I probably agree with the governor to some extent that the federal government does have an obligation to help the states out on COVID costs. I mean, we can't print money on the state level. We have to by the state constitution have a balanced budget at the end of the year. So when you have these bumps in the road, you know, which is maybe an understatement for the COVID pandemic. Yeah. We can't, you know, we're still stuck with our money coming in and our money going out. So I do think there's a role for the government. However, I also do think the governor has exaggerated how much New York is owed due to COVID. And I think that undermines his argument when he goes to Washington, because they're going to say, you're not doing this just for COVID. You're doing it to cover your own, as you said, your budget mismanagement. So the good news at this budget, it seems like our revenue has been coming in fairly strong. So we may be able to get through this year. It's the outer years that are going to be more of a challenge. So I look forward to working with my colleagues on the federal level and trying to come up with a reasonable amount of money that the feds, I think, should support us, but not going crazy where they should try to, you know, patch over any of the bad budgeting we've done in the past.
You're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. I'm Grant Reher, and I'm talking with New York State Assemblyman Will Barkley. He's the minority leader of that chamber. So it does seem like, given the budget problems that we have been discussing, that it would be a good year for the legalization of recreational marijuana. The governor has come in strong on this just recently. What's your take on that? Do you think this is the year that this is going to happen, and are you happy to see it happening?
Well, I don't support the legalization of marijuana, so I guess I'm not happy with seeing it. I'm a little worried about how this is being rolled out as it's some sort of savior for our budget crisis. I think legalization of marijuana is a big policy, public policy issue that needs to be considered on its own merits, and not trying to think somehow this is the only reason we ought to do it is because it's going to help bring revenue in the state. I guess you could say if that's the case, maybe that's one argument for it. But there's a lot of negatives in my mind that come along with it. Just my mind thinking we have a lot of problems with alcohol. We have a lot of problems with drugs. We're trying to get people to stop smoking. We've made vaping illegal. It just seems like a step in the wrong direction. And all of a sudden, we're going to legalize marijuana. And then it seems particularly in the wrong direction by saying we're doing it to try to raise revenue, which, by the way, as we've seen in other states have done it, there's been a lot of promises that this was going to bring in a ton of revenue. And I know in Colorado, I think they thought they were going to get their whole school system paid for it. But it turns out the revenue they raised through marijuana is something like 0.6% of their budget. So the revenue projections haven't come even close to what, you know, some that tried to sell them when they were proponents for legalization. That never came true. So, you know, I don't know where our conference is. I haven't asked our fellow conference members. I imagine there's some people that might support it and some not. I think there has been a progression over the years where more people are supporting it, but I'm not at that stage yet.
And then there's been a push by many political reformers, particularly in light now of the issues with the election that we just had, to make more changes in New York's electoral system, to try to make it more secure, to try to make it more open and inclusive. What kinds of changes there in the electoral system does your conference support, and are there any changes out there that worry you?
I think we had a lot of challenges this year just with the absentee voting, and you saw it with the congressional race. Actually, my congressional district, I think it's the 22nd, and they still haven't come to a conclusion who won the election. And I don't blame the local board of elections. I think they got overwhelmed. I don't think anyone foresaw the amount of absentee ballots are going to happen. So we have to do something at least to support these local boards of election to make sure that if we do have a similar election that's going forward, they have the ability to count absentee votes efficiently in a fair manner. I think just as a general theory or thesis on this, we want to make sure that everybody who wants to vote has the ability to vote. I think every elected official feels that. But we also want to make sure that our systems has the integrity and is not subject to fraud. And I'm not saying there has been a lot of fraud out there, but I don't know. For instance, you could register to vote over the internet. And we're looking into the fact that a lot of IP sites were registering up to, it's one thing to do it, I guess, for your family, which isn't necessarily legal, but people are doing, 20 or 30 people they're registering. What's going on here? Is that something that was legal, or is this kind of vote harvesting? It's not quite at that level. So I think there's a lot of this election particularly raised a lot of issues that I think we have to go back and look at. And again, I think we all believe in the fact that everybody who wants to vote ought to be able to vote, but we also want to maintain the integrity of our system. We can use those as two guardrails. I think we can come up with a plan that's good and helps.
You mentioned earlier using this particular legislative session that's coming up to really focus on helping small businesses and learning from the things that COVID has exposed about the business climate in New York. And we've talked about healthcare now, marijuana, electoral reform. Is there any other issue that we haven't talked about that will be important to you and your conference this year?
Yeah, I think the other big thing that kind of got pushed off the side, but it was a big issue last January and February and continues to be a problem for the state, is criminal justice. You look around the state, you'll see crime rates spiking, and it's not just, theft. This is violent crime. Murders are up. Murders are up in New York City, 41%. Shootings up in Albany, 110%. Syracuse, murders are up 53%. So something's going on here, Grant, and I happen to think, I don't think there's one direct problem to say, this is it, if we can fix this, it's going to solve the problem. But certainly these so-called reforms of our criminal justice system that have been through, whether it's bail reform, whether it's raise the age, or just the general anti-police narrative that's out there, I think is all aiding this increase in crime. And we have to get our arms around it. If we can't have safe neighborhoods and safe state, that's just going to continue to cause difficulties that we already have in New York State with people leaving and continue downward spiral.
Do you anticipate any efforts on the part of Democrats to push further on some of those things regarding policing that are going to concern you?
Yeah, and they may be going the opposite direction, but I think there is a realization, at least from the governor, that this isn't sustainable. Last year, a lot of my colleagues on the other side of the aisle were saying we shouldn't open up bail reform. That's a non-starter, but ultimately we ended up doing it in the budget. We didn't go as far as I would like to have seen. I would like to see more judicial discretion with bail reform, but they did start including taking out some of the crimes that weren't eligible for cash bail, and they put those back in. So I think that was a step in the right direction, but there's a lot more to be done. And I think it's a urgency that needs to be done. And that urgency got lost a little bit during this pandemic. But once we come out of this, I think people are going to be back recognizing that this is a real issue for New York State.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. And my guest is New York State Assembly Minority Leader Will Barkley. Well, I wanted to take the rest of the time to shift from the state politics and ask you some questions more about the national scene and about your party. First of all, we had these violent protests at the U.S. Capitol. It's been an enormous story, really a historical moment. And a lot of Republicans are receiving much sharper and more widespread criticism for their support of the president than they had up until now, the ones that are sticking with them at least. Do you think that this could be some kind of inflection point for the Republican Party when it comes to its relationship with Donald Trump going forward?
Well, let me say this. I think it's the biggest problem we have right now in the United States. Again, it's a little bit out of my jurisdiction, but is the political divide. I think we have, mm-hmm. On both sides, the Democratic side and the Republican, and everybody's off on their own corner and no one's coming together to work together. And I think Trump's actions, and I think the attack on the Capitol was, that is disgusting. And it was terrible and it should be condemned in strong extreme. I'm not saying that. Do I think the impeachment is the greatest thing happening right now to the country? I don't happen to feel that way. I think that just continues to go on. That's going to emphasize this divide we have. I mean, we're looking at Trump to have this time today, 6 days left. I think we're going to be moving on from the Trump era. Biden won. The Republicans need to recognize that and get over it. I strongly feel that way. But at the same time, the Democrats have to understand, hey, Biden won. Trump's going to be leaving. There's no need to keep doing this going forward. I don't think impeachment, in my mind, I don't think it's serving anybody at this point.
The concern about what it does to the political polarization, if it would just further deepen something that is already very problematically deep, that's a legitimate argument. But I'm wondering what you would say to the other side of that argument, which is that, let's take Congressman Katko's statement on this, which I imagine you saw the other day, but basically the gist of it was, looking at this like a prosecutor, it's clear to him that the president helped instigate the violence at the Capitol, and he has to be held accountable for that, that there has to be some kind of accountability, that history requires that, the country's political integrity requires that, even though, on the other hand, it may deepen that polarization. I think the congressman even mentioned a concern about that, but he came down in a different way. How would you respond to that particular argument?
Well, I'm not sure impeachment is the best answer for that. There has been suggestions that he ought to be censored. He ought to be realized that he can't run again, if that's what the concern is, even though I'm not even sure about that. I mean, I don't not always love the idea that we're going to somehow mandate someone to take away the voice of the people. But putting that aside, I just don't think impeachment is the right thing to do at this time. It might be a different story, Grant, if this was a year ago, or, when there's still lengthy amount of term. We are moving on as a country, like it or not. Republicans may hate it, Democrats may love it, but it's happening. And so people have to realize that Donald Trump is only going to be president for a short time period. So in my mind, if you had to balance the two, I just think impeachment will just add to that partisan divide, and it's not going to bring anyone together. I would say this is what I hope to see going forward. Donald Trump, there's a lot of stuff, policy, that I agreed with. One thing he was not, clearly was not, is a uniter. I hope the new president, President Biden, will focus on that and really work. He says there's no such thing as blue state, red states. I hope he believes that. I would love to see him come out and say, let's stop this nonsense, let's move on. But I hope he can be a uniter for the country. And if he does, I'll be there to try to help unite whatever voice I have on the right to help bring them to the center, to work together.
Yeah, I get the sense that Biden probably, if it was up to him, would not like to see impeachment go forward. He's expressed concerns about it taking up all the oxygen in Washington when he's trying to do things in the first 100 days. But it is obviously a trade-off, and you can see both sides of it. Let me ask you this question, just to be a predictor. How do you think this is all going to end up? The House has brought articles of impeachment now to the Senate. Mitch McConnell has indicated that he's going to kind of let the Republicans go. Do you think they're going to get the threshold that they need to convict in the Senate?
I don't think so. I think this is all today's politics. I think all the wind in the sails for this will just completely dissipate within a couple of weeks. I've been wrong on a lot of things, but I just don't see this continuing on. And I do happen to agree. I don't think the Biden is going to want this to be a continued issue, because it just is sucking the air out of the room. And I presume that he wants to put his stamp on his administration and his policies on the country, and this just takes away from that. So my guess is that it will go away, eventually, but we're going to live through it for the next week or so.
How about the Republican Party in New York State? Do you think this might be a moment where it becomes more of a party that looks like Will Barkley? I mean, you don't sound like a Claudia Tenney, for example. You seem more moderate. So do you think the party might move?
I correct you on the moderate side. I think I'm maybe not as much of a flamethrower or a bomb thrower, but I certainly have very strong policy beliefs that I think are good for the New York State and good for our country. And some of those things align with whether it's Claudia or the president or whoever. And I'm gladly fight for those and continue to push for it. In New York, I don't necessarily think the Republicans are the ones at the extreme. I think what we're seeing in New York is a lot of the other side of the aisle, the Democrats out of New York City, who really are extreme. You know, they're talking about policies that seem unimaginable, maybe even 6 months ago, defunding the police. We had six Democratic socialists elected to the state assembly, beating out, which most people, dispassionate people might say were pretty strong liberals in the assembly. They beat him out. I think of Joe Lentol, who ran the codes. I mean, he was there forever. And he was certainly no shrinking violet when it came to pushing a left side ideology. And he still got beat. So, the idea that Republicans don't have to come to the center, I don't think the problem in New York State for Republicans is coming to the center. I think it's the other side or other side.
Well, one last question. We've only got a couple seconds left, so you'll have to be really quick on this. But I did an interview with Senator Rachel May last week, and I asked her to give me something at the end that would help me with my COVID fatigue and lift my spirits. So what can you give me in 10 seconds that's going to lift my spirits?
Well, don't you think I feel this way? I mean, hopefully I'm not wrong, but I do feel like we're coming out of this pandemic. And we can come out of this pandemic. I hope we come out stronger. I'm optimistic. We just started, in Albany. I think, the speaker, the majority leader, myself, tried to give a positive speech. But we're New Yorkers. We can come through this. We can all work together. And that's what I'm going to continue to do to try to get the best policies implemented for New York State to bring the state and make it back the Empire State.
Thank you. That was Will Barkley, Assemblyman Barkley. I want to thank you for taking the time for talking to me, and I'm going to wish continued good health to you and your family. I'm glad you recovered so quickly.
Thanks.
You've been listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media, conversations in the public interest.
The Campbell Conversations, conversations in the public interest, was hosted and produced by Grant Reher, engineered by Tom Fazio, and edited by Mark Lipponier. The Campbell Conversations is a joint production of the Campbell Public Affairs Institute at Syracuse University and WRVO Public Media. To learn more about the program or to hear previous interviews, visit wrvo.org/Campbell Conversations.